thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from Celtic Underground. You are possibly picking this up on thecelticunderground.substack.com. If you are a paid subscriber, you can link your account to wherever you pick up your podcasts, whether that be Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever, and you can pick up the subscription feed where you get your normal feed. Just go on to Substack on the website and follow the instructions. Meantime, this is Andrew H. Smith in conversation.
Welcome to Celtic Underground in conversation, and it's a special edition this week. Special for two reasons. We have two guests, but we also, we're going to discuss a very special initiative in the kind of Celtic firmament, and that's the Celtic Grave Society. And who better to have to talk through that than two of the founder members back in 2010, Frank Hannaway and Jim Blythe. Frank and Jim, thanks very much for coming on, and lovely to see you.
Yep, thanks for having us.
Hi. Yep, thanks for the invitation. Much appreciated.
No, it's something I wanted to do as soon as I was starting to do these just about 8 months ago. Something that's always fascinated me, because it just seems so Celtic to me, but it also seems so, I don't know. Well, I'll start, whatever one of you wants to take this up. I mean, what was the motivation behind it? Has any other club been doing this kind of thing? Did you get the idea for any other club, or do you think you guys were among the first? I'll go left to right, if that's all right. So, Frank, can you kind of help me out with that one?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you can hear me a bit better, but it went back to a situation regarding Willie Maley's grave, where someone on one of the Celtic forums had found that the gravestone was in a bit of a mess and had commented that this is really sad, given the status of Willie Maley, this has actually happened. And as something we have come across later is that, you know, there's no necessarily a reason. At the end of the day, you know, some of these deaths have happened such a long time ago, and it's not always the case that family are there to continue to take care of a gravestone. But what eventually happened was that contact was made with the family, and contact was made with the club as well, and there was a coming together where that situation was put right. So that was it, and that was it for a lot of people. That was, they just left it. But there was about five or six of us online at the time on different Celtic forums, got talking to each other, saying, if Willie Maley's grave is in that state, what's the chances are that the situation could be worse for maybe some lesser known Celts? And we had discussed that there's a possibility of looking at this without knowing exactly what it would entail, maybe we should get together and talk it through to see if there's some sort of project that we can maybe take forward if more situations are highlighted. Before I came here, I lived in England for over 30 years, so it was fitting in when I was back in Glasgow for a game, and we got together in a pub in Partick, and
was it the Dolphin?
No, it was
the other one.
So we got together, got talking, and from that we decided to set up this society. As far as I'm concerned, we were the very first. There are other now grave societies for other clubs, some of whom have contacted us for advice and how we went about it. And we've helped accordingly. It's just spiraled from there. It's been fantastic to be involved with. It takes a lot of work, but it's been really good.
Imagine it. And Jim, for your point of view, how did you get involved? So you two didn't know each other before the Celtic Grave Society came into being?
think me and Frank were or sort of are on one of the around the same sort of Celtic forum. And as Frank said, there were a number of us came together from different forums. I think one of the guys who's still in the committee actually took sort of responsibility for sort of getting us all together, and a couple of us sort of who'd seen the issue about Willie Maley had sort of made contact saying, okay, can I help in any way? This is my skill set, or if you want to call it a skill set. But it was obviously an issue of, you know, of much discussion on various sort of Celtic forums, and it piqued a lot of interest. And we quite often with something like this, you hear the phrase, something must be done.
Yeah.
Enough just sort of typing furiously and something must be done. Sometimes it's a wee bit harder saying, right, okay, what can I do? So, and as I discovered later, I knew that, or I found out later that Frank had an interest in genealogy. I've always had an interest in sort of my second half of my life in family history, finding out what my family history was, genealogy, and some of that moved into beyond family trees and into, well, where are my ancestors buried? How do I find where my ancestors are buried? And that's a whole different sort of specialism and their challenges. But I thought, rather than, or as well as maybe furiously type, what's going to be done about this? I got in touch with one of the organisers and let them know that there were people in our forum who were certainly interested. And I think that was maybe the golden days of the sort of Celtic forums. There were a lot of really sort of flourishing Celtic forums. So I think it was natural. And it was a great thing that people did come together from various forums. So, you know, there was no...
territorial.
There were no territory. There were no criteria for getting involved beyond, okay, this is what I'm interested in. This is what I can do. Can I help in any way? And, you know, then when you sit down, it was, you were nearly there, Andrew. It was the other sort of partick shop of great repute rather than ill repute, it's Smiddy. So we went into the side room of the Smiddy and had our sort of first meeting there. And, you know, see when you sit down with a bunch of Celtic fans, you know, sort of eventually you'll get into talking about what you're there to talk about. But, you know, it was great bunch of guys, great in the project. And the projects which came from that sort of developed from that night. But see, just looking and talking, looking these guys in the eye, you thought, yeah, I think, well, this is something that I'd like to become involved in. Yeah. You know, rather than sort of being forced into doing it, I thought, I'd really like to become involved in this. And I think I can help, rather than just sort of being the periphery of it. I think I can help. And one of the, as Frank says, I think we were the first sort of grave society within sort of football. I've never sort of come across it. I'm actually quite proud that there's a few others now and that we've worked with some of the other sort of grave societies. But one of the things which was referred to in the early day was the National Graves Association in Ireland, or the National Graves Society. I think it's National Graves Association. And that wasn't our inspiration, but we knew that there were a group of people doing that for sort of for significant figures in Irish history. So we thought, okay, that's not us, but you know, that there are obviously ways and means of being able to trace people and honor them. And that was the thing, trace them and then give them the respect that we thought they were due.
And that was the ethos, to kind of commemorate or give a kind of a final kind of commemoration, if you like. That's what a gravestone is. It's a final commemoration in a lot of ways, isn't it? To recognise their contribution.
And, you know, I suppose also, you know, when we got together that night, when we started looking at our first project, and I don't know if you want me to sort of mention that just now, Andrew, but, you know, we looked to after the Willy Melee, exactly as Frank said about the, okay, if this is Willy Melee, and you know, there's so many gravestones we come across, so many monuments we come across about the passage of time, and it's an interesting sort of philosophical question. Do you let the, what, one of which we discuss regularly, do you let the graves sort of naturally let nature take its course over a period of time, or do you intervene? And but when we saw that nature really had intervened in sort of Willy Melee's case, we thought, exactly as Frank says, what about the other graves or some of the lesser known players? And when we discussed what could we do, we thought, actually, what should the starting point be? And it seemed quite natural. The starting point should be the very first Celtic team. But there was a limit to what, and we didn't feel that a gravestone itself, a gravestone is a mark of respect, I think, but it doesn't tell the full story. So from that, I think very, very early on, we decided that we need to tell these people's stories. And those stories came about via sometimes podcasts like this, but booklets. We put together booklets of various sizes with whatever we knew about the players. But then we thought, actually, what are we going to do when we put a gravestone up, or when we put a marker down in these graves? We need to commemorate it. So we commemorated it. So we have a commemoration every time we have a ceremony. We have a marker, gravestone. We put a booklet together telling the story of the person's, the player's, or significant figure's life. But then we have a commemoration. So we have a public event of sort of respect and commemoration and celebration of their life.
Yeah, Frank, and this is where it gets personal for me, because my sister spoke at the recent one on behalf of the Lark Hall Celtic Supporters Club, like for Jimmy Meek's Day. You know, like it made us feel a wee bit strange, actually, because our grandparents are buried in that graveyard, unmarked graves. I have to say, you know, we've never even it affects you deeply, because my wife, she's from North Uist, and her great uncle lied about his age to fight in the First World War, so and he got killed within a month. So he's buried in one of the, you know, the wee kind of stone grave, the one of the war graves up in Belgium. And we were driving through it a few years ago, and I'd spoken to my father-in-law, and he told my wife that there'd only one cousin had ever gone to the grave in the 100 years. Only one member of the family had ever gone to see this guy. So we went, even though it's not my history, it's not, but see, when we went there, and we, you have to look through it, you know, in the war graves, you have to go through, you know, you go in the little kind of building, and they have all the kind of, it's computerized, digitized and all that, where it is. And then just walking up to it and being there. And it's quite a kind of, it's quite a profound experience. Look, I do find graveyards, because that graveyard we're taught about, from bloody, there's about 40 of my family buried there. So, you know, you're almost tripping over one of my family members of that, where you did the Jimmy Meek's Day commemoration, which was only a couple of months ago. You know, so for you, look, was it, Frank, something that, I mean, it seems, in some ways it might seem morbid and maudlin, and people always say Celtic supporters, we're kind of, I'm not saying you have to be Catholic, by the way, but I just mean our kind of Catholic, a lot of our Catholic heritage that we do, there's nothing we like more than a good death, is it? You know, I always thought that about the way we celebrate. I don't know how many Thompson pieces I've written, but you know, we like, you know, there's something about that kind of Irish Catholic thing, isn't there? That we, you know, in the midst of life, we are in death. I don't know, Frank, do you agree, or do you think I'm
kinder? I think it's fair, but I think there is a Celtic part to it as well, in the sense that the foundations of the club and how people followed the club from the beginning, and for me, that's looking to my family and friends of that family who would tell me stories. They always retain the memories of great players or great matches that they had seen, and they don't want to forget them, but at the same time, they want to pass it on, you know, because they think that this is a club that is with you all of your life, and that to embrace that is to understand why it was founded, but in particular to look at some of these players and what they meant to those people in that generation. So for me, that comes into it, you know, and you know, Jim touched on that doing the first 11, which was a pretty massive job.
Yeah, it took a lot of help. You didn't start small, did you?
It took
you
a lot.
Didn't go for an easy one, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It took a lot of help from other fans, you know. But the sort of first one we did in Glasgow, major one, was for Dan Doyle. Now, I've read about Dan Doyle. I'd heard about Dan Doyle because people spoke about him. He was a blue chip signing, if you like, back then. But he was living in he was buried in an unmarked grave, you know, which was really, really sad given the status he had as club captain. He'd captained Scotland. He'd been a massive player at Everton. And you then think that's when it all comes to you that, you know, this person may have been a great player or maybe done a lot for the club, but suddenly in death, it was something else, you know, and I felt we were playing our part in remembering those individuals for what they'd done for the club. In some cases, it brings a lot of families together. We found that as part of some of the events that we've done, where family members have come from across the planet to be at it. And they're meeting up with each other for the first time, or maybe they've not met for a long time. But in some cases, there's no family. And that, in a way, is sad as well, you know. So, I think there's a lot to it. I hear what you say. I mean, I've had people say to me about, it's a bit morbid, you know. I don't really, that's not for me, you know, and that's okay. I get that. But at the same time, there are loads of people, attendees, that like to have paid the respects. They maybe know, they may have read or heard about the player involved. They're doing their bit, as I say, to almost thinking back to their own family. Right. And that may have been somebody they followed that was a big hero of theirs or whatever. And we've also found that when we do some of these events, their younger fans come along. So they get to hear some of the history, you know. I mean, we did the Johnny Campbell one, and we had representatives there from Third Lanark. So you get young kids, who's Third Lanark? So, you know, there's a bit of education in there about the player, the club, and maybe, you know, a bit wider than that as far as other clubs are concerned as well. So,
Jim,
it's worthwhile.
Oh, definitely. Like, I don't think you wouldn't be still doing it 15 years on, and I know you have got plans to, you know, like, take this forward again. Like, I don't know if you want to kind of talk about those, Jim, because what I'd heard, like, Jimmy McStay was one branch of the kind of captains, kind of, like, I don't know if I'm getting that right, Jim, but you can.
Aye. So we've had, it was interesting actually putting together a list to send you, Andrew, because see if you'd have asked me how many commemorations we'd done, you know, I might have said about sort of 20 or something all the years, maybe 20 or 30. I think there's about 46, 47, and we've...
Astonishing. You
know, we've also, of sort of players, and as I said earlier, it's been really good to have some joint events with people of similar ethos in other football clubs. It's one thing that we've all got our rivalries, you know, because we've maybe got the biggest rivalry in world football. But we've all got our rivalries, but working together with, you know, the Odbor Pratel from Slavia Prague was amazing. The Everton Heritage Society. I know Frank's done quite a bit of work with the Chelsea Grave Society and sort of players who played for us both. And that, to know, we knew that there were other people out there who would have the same mindset. I don't think this is a uniquely Celtic thing. Maybe it took Celtic and our ethos to actually start it, but to connect with those people was great, or is great, because I'm sure we will have other sort of commemorations like that in the future. But we had a rolling program, and there are always sort of challenges within that. And then when COVID came, COVID was a big sort of break on all of our sort of lives.
Of course.
And many things which we had planned, which were sort of bubbling under, just sort of went by the wayside for a good couple of years. And it has taken a wee bit of time just to sort of get back those connections, and families have changed as well. People's lives have changed. So we had the ceremony last year. COVID stopped. We looked at our priorities, and there were a couple of events we'd been discussing. Dan MacArthur was sort of really significant because it was so close to Celtic Park, actually buried in the Eastern Necropolis.
That's right.
I mean, I would say within shouting distance, the jungle, but, you know, it's given the noise that Celtic supporters can make, it was probably whispering distance.
Amazing
just how close it is to Celtic Park. We wanted to do that, and the family had spoken before when they'd been, they're all based in the States. So when the family had visited, I think it was 2013 or something, Frank, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For a match, their whole, I think there were about a dozen of them came over, grandkids, grandchildren, or great grandkids of Dan MacArthur, grandchildren, and they had such a level of pride in their connection to the club. So it had been one we'd sort of discussed for a while. So being able to do that and making those connections with that family in New York and New Jersey was amazing. And so without hesitation, a number of them came over for the commemoration, and we had a great weekend with the commemoration. We got them tickets for the match the next day, which just happened to be against Rangers, which was a win, so it was great. Ask how we got the tickets, by the way. But those connections were great, and then that sort of got us back into, right, let's get the ball rolling again. Let's really sort of get back to where we were. But one of the challenges we have is that our motto in the early days, one of the things we discovered and made a commitment to, was that it's families first, wish yes. Families. We think that he's a Celtic player, and there's a level of possession in that, not sort of witchcraft, but we possess these players, and we don't. They're sort of family people first and foremost. And sometimes we discover that, you know, they have no traceable family, which is sad. Referring back to what you said earlier, Andrew, you know, it's a fairly common story. All families ultimately are the same. I discovered that all families mostly have the same issues, some of them public, some of them private, but a lot of the issues are the same. Looking to make contact with those families, I actually think that it's become more challenging. So when you do a family history, you trace back. But when you try and connect and find their family, maybe something which Frank will touch on later on for one of our current projects, you've got to forward track, reverse the process. So if you know somebody died 100 years ago,
right,
then you can trace their father, their grandfather, where they came from. But if they died 100 years ago, where are their family now?
Oh, right.
You have to reverse trace a family history, which is really challenging. So, and it has become more difficult to do that. And we have a number of contacts at Celtic. We have a close relationship with Celtic. Sometimes they have an ongoing relationship with the families, so they can put us in touch with families. So that led to after Dan MacArthur, that led to Jimmy McStay. We had a number of conversations about Jimmy McStay. And back to your question, we thought, okay, one significant thing we'd really like to do is to have a series of commemorations and show the level of respect and gratitude that as Celtic supporters we have for those who have captained the club. Now, we'd had a number of commemorations previously for captains of the club, like James Kelly, who's you know, got a sort of magnificent monument. I'd have to sort of look back in my list, but we have had other sort of commemorations of Celtic captains, but thought, okay, who would our priorities be in terms of Celtic captains? We looked at a number, and then when we looked at Jimmy McStay, we kept coming back to Jimmy McStay. Jimmy was one of the only five who have been captain, player and manager of the club. And that's incredible. So we made contact with that family, and I think it was a huge success. And it was with Pauline, it was great, because that's one of our aims, to try and really get supporters clubs more involved. And we managed that a few years ago. With Jimmy Delaney, being able to do that with Jimmy McStay is something we'd really like to do more of moving forward. So we have a number of events which are bubbling under in the captains series. We really want to pay tribute to the captains, but we've had a real challenge in the last couple of years, and there's a can't go into too many of the details just now, but there's an amazing story which will come out in the next sort of year or so if we manage to have this the commemoration we're working towards. So we have usually have two or three on the go at the same time, Andrew. But there's one that we really want to do, and to be able to tell this amazing story, which goes back to the formation of the club and some of the most significant players in the club. So we've got a wee bit of an appeal in Celtic support to ask if they can help us to put us in touch with them. So maybe that's something Frank wants to sort of mention.
Yeah, Frank, if you want to take that up.
Yeah, I mean, there's it's one player in particular. I'm just going to give some high level information.
This is a place to do it. This is
you never know.
It's
one that we've had great difficulty with because this ex player died a single man. So there is no direct family there that we've been able to forward trace. We have done some, but it's more of an extended family. So the player in particular is a former goalkeeper called John Kelly. Obviously, the commonality of the name doesn't help as part of that research that we'd undertaken. So he was at the club in that first season. He didn't play many games at all, but he was closely connected to the club. What you've got is Robert Kelly had kept in touch with him. And it was something that was never lost. And he was actually on the guest list for the 50th anniversary of the club. So that's 1938. So the fact that he still had that contact, he obviously meant a lot to a lot of people at the club. Now, we know that John Kelly died in 1939. And we know that the death certificate was signed by his niece, who was called Agnes McClure, maiden name Campbell. She herself died in 1959. So they're all based in Glasgow, but it's trying to reach out to what would be an extended family. Obviously, generations now removed from John, but it's just us trying to make that connection to the family, to tell them the story and what we would then like to do as part of that. We're using this forum here, if you like.
To make
the appeal, if anybody, you know, can help in that respect, then by all means, get in touch. It's this part of it that can become very, very difficult. We land lucky where some people are researching their family. So, yep, that was my great-great-grandfather. The connections then are easy. But when you don't find anything in that respect, it makes it far more difficult. Yeah. We have to accept that there may be the possibility we might never find a contact. but we try every avenue we can to do so. So we don't just, well, we had a 5-minute try, so it never happened. We tried over a period of time, and we tried different forums, different ways of trying to make that contact. And hopefully we get it. It has worked in the past, so it's not as if we think it'll never happen. That may be the case, but we have had success doing it that way. So fingers crossed that we're able to actually get somebody that puts their hand up and said, actually, I'm connected to him.
That shows the kind of sensitivity you have around the family's involvement. I mean, for want of a better phrase, what happens if you reach a dead end?
Well, that's dependent on other circumstances, and those circumstances are, the main one is the ownership of the grave, the ownership of that piece of land, otherwise known as a lair. Who owns the lair? And then having the necessary permissions to be able to place a marker or a headstone on the grave. Now, one thing that we work closely with authorities as well when we need to, such as the Archdiocese or various councils who own the graveyards. So we don't need permission, Andrew, to put a marker down. So for the first 11, we traced all of the family members, apart from Charlie Gorevin, who was buried in New York. There were a couple of first elves buried in the States. But Charlie Gorevin, we managed to track down where his grave was. And during a tour, he actually had a grave. He didn't have there was a headstone on the grave. So during a tour, Tony Hamilton and Adrian Philby, I believe, from Celtic, visited the grave in New York and laid flowers on behalf of the club and ourselves. But on those occasions where it's an unmarked grave, we are able to put a marker down, and that marker doesn't count as something being constructed on the grave. So we have the permission, we've notified the authorities that we're doing that. And then if we ever do find a family, if a family comes back after a commemoration, then that marker can simply be placed at the side, or they can put, as has happened when we've had ceremonies in the past and we've put markers down for players, and it's brought the family together, and the family have then decided after the event that actually they would like to put up a full headstone. As well as having the marker there, they would then like to put up a full headstone. So that's one of the reasons. Our ethos, as I said, our ethos is that we have this, everything has to be done in association with the families. But there is that logistical and semi-legal issue of we can't touch somebody's lair. We can't be putting anything on a lair, such as a headstone, without the permission of the lair owner. So that's a side reason to contact the families. But first and foremost, it's because of, as you said, our ethos.
Yeah, and Frank, like for you, you made a reference to it earlier on, but we should explain that you now live in Canada for the last couple of years for your living family reasons. But has that changed in the sense of how you? But I suppose you were always kind of part of this from afar, in the sense of you haven't lived in the kind of near in Scotland for 30 years, I think you were saying to me. So has it changed how you can get involved? And a lot of this stuff, like the genealogy, a lot of it is, it's almost like detective work, isn't it? So you can do it wherever you are.
Yeah, you can. I mean, I think the certainly the aspect I do miss, whilst living in England and being a bit remote when some of your discussions needed to take place, as far as the research was concerned and going to the Mitchell Library to look at newspapers or to go to Register House in Edinburgh to look at the civil registration record, that I miss immensely. I can do some of that online. But it's a lot limited in comparison to what you can do whilst you're there. So some of that stuff that I might have been able to put more effort into to help the society in general, I'm relying on other members like Jim of the committee to maybe do some of that spade work. So that aspect I do miss. I'm still keenly involved with the society, and we do. I mean, a lot of our meetings are online anyway, so that doesn't change any. It's only the time difference I have to worry about.
And thanks for making allowances for us today on that front.
But I mean, as far as the enthusiasm's concerned, that's still there as much as it was back in 2010. I mean, we've done some really exciting projects over the years, some stick in the memory maybe more than others, but you just continually look forward for more, and you hope that you know, the fans or whatever appreciate what's there and maybe take an interest in the players or the, you know, that we're commemorating.
Yeah. And of course, look, obviously your independence, Jim, I would imagine is important to you, because, you know, you're not part of Celtic. You're a supporters group, essentially. You're people that have come to commit together, some like minds. But was that important to you, that you could look like Celtic? I would imagine Celtic are pretty kind of decent with you by and large, like you have good relations, but you're very much, you've got an autonomy. Was that important to you?
I don't think that was a conscious decision that, oh no, we, you know, we have to be totally independent of Celtic. I think it's just sort of evolved that way. But, you know, I think our relationship with Celtic is something that we're proud of. You know, if we need to talk to them about a commemoration, or if, you know, there's something in particular, just trying to think off the top of my head where it would be, but, you know, there's a couple of significant things, you know, when we need a speaker. For example, we've got, I mentioned Tony earlier, Tony Hamilton, the Chief Executive of Celtic FC Foundation. Tony's been great. He's sort of one of our great supporters from literally from day one. I think he's an early adopter, I think they call him. He'll probably hit me for that, but he's an early adopter. But, you know, so those relationships, and I actually think your independence, as I said, it's evolved. It's not a conscious thing, but I think the club respects that. The club have never sort of said, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, or don't do it this way, don't do it that way, which I suppose is a sort of sign of success. Maybe another way of looking at it is that's one less thing they have to do. I think there's a bit of trust. I think there's a bit of trust between them and us, but, you know, we very much are, you know, we're Celtic fans. You know, I started getting for the game last night. I was sort of, I better check for this podcast today. And but, you know, we live our lives. Frank and I were speaking earlier today, you know, about the game, about football. You know, we're in other group chats where we just talk, you know, mince about Celtic, because we're just Celtic fans like you, like everybody who might be watching or listening to this pod, Andrew, be they 10 years old or be they sort of 90 years old. And we'd like to think that we're sort of fairly representative of that. But the, as I said, the working with families has been great. I think, see, if I was to think of the most sort of rewarding thing over the years, you know, in it for the rewards. But actually, the thing that gets my soul a lot of the time is just when you have that connection with the families, and then the supporters club, seeing the supporters clubs come in a full sort of turnout. When we did Jimmy Delaney, and there were, I think, five or six different sort of supporters clubs from North Lanarkshire. It's great. It's really great. And I got off the train. I got off the train at Dalmarnock last night, and I came from the west, and there were, you know, there was a train load of supporters, obviously from North Lanarkshire, came off at the same time. And I thought, this is great. This is who we are. We come from far and wide, but we have similar aims. And sometimes when you make that first contact with the family, you can be a wee bit nervous beforehand, but see, a lot of the time, they've been very, very proud of their ancestor for decades or longer. They've known their Celtic story. So having somebody come along and say, we'd like to talk to you about commemorating your ancestor or commemorating this famous person in your family, or in some occasions, would like to tell you a wee bit more about their lives, which it's so rewarding, so fulfilling. But sometimes it's when they feel recognised.
Yes.
And it's almost like, I've been expecting you, Mr. Bond.
Yeah.
You know, ready, because they think, absolutely great. He is part of your history. He's a small part of our history, or he's a massive part of our history. For us, sort of all the same. We all, each of us in this call is a part of Celtic history. You know, it might be just sort of following us for decades or passing it on, passing the torch on to the next generation, but we've all got a role, and it's great when we see that. And when we see that in other families, really, really rewarding and inspiring sometimes.
I think just taking on from there, Jim touched on Jimmy Delaney. The commemoration for Jimmy Delaney was fantastic. And as Jim says, it involved supportive clubs attending from throughout the area, not just in the Cleland area. But one of the things that we also did, and it was so well attended again by young and old, one of the ideas that we had for that is that Jimmy Delaney was such a famous player, not just for Celtic, not just in Scotland, and he had played for numerous clubs, is that we had the idea of those clubs providing flowers in their club colours to be laid at the graveside. And that was a huge task on its own. Some clubs were, who are you? Why is this? I don't know anything about the history of my club. I'll need to go and ask someone else. Contact I made with Manchester United was, well, we're a big club, so you also have to bite your tongue, because you Jeez. Ultimately are wanting something from them. But one of the things that always sticks with me is that whilst there was quite a few clubs and it was a success, we got it to work. The club that had absolutely no hesitation at all and provided the necessary to get flowers laid in their club colours was Elgin City.
All right.
So, as I say, Jimmy, famous player, and you're struggling with Manchester United, who did deliver. They wanted to use their own florist, but they did deliver. But Elgin City were absolutely spot on from the very beginning. The person I'd spoken to knew who it was, knew a bit about the history, and whilst they didn't necessarily know who Celtic Grave Society were, he listened and understood and got it done, which was fantastic. And it just added to the occasion, because we used younger fans to come on almost in a procession to lay the flowers at Jimmy's grave. And it summed it up, because the guy had been such a fantastic player that I'd heard about as a kid. And it made an impact at many clubs that he played for.
Yeah, I picked him as one of I wrote a book, Celtic Miscellany, and I had to do 13 greatest players. And actually, he was one of the 13 I did. And my pal who'd interviewed, Roddy Stewart, used to do interviews for the Celtic programme, roughly when I started back in the late 80s. And he interviewed Jimmy, you know, and Jimmy said, you know, and you guys know more than to explain to people, like, the career he had at Manchester United that eclipsed his Celtic days. But he said, that was what he said to Roddy. He said, I only just want to ever be remembered as Jimmy Delaney of Celtic. And you, in a way, you gave him that. He's gave him that in his death or in his passing, in a way, you know, with your efforts.
It was
that must make you I know, Jim, you said it's not about you, it's not about, but you still got a sense of pride when you can, I think my father used to always read my stuff in Celtic and all that. He said, and he always, God rest him, used to always say, we always try to introduce the humanity. And I think that's because Celtic somehow, it draws the humanity from you. And this, what you guys are doing with the Celtic, that's an aspect to that kind of, there's something very humane to me. This is just my thesis, my a little bit Celtic. There's something very, it's about the kind of, the humanity in people, within people. And what you guys are doing is part of that, you know, like I feel it's just so kind of, it's so kind of right for what I feel is the best of Celtic.
Aye, but yours is a living history, Andrew. That's, I think that's the significant thing. You know, we can talk about, you know, players and the commemorations from the early days, Neil McCallum, Tom Maley, you know, Jerry Reynolds, players who are known to the broader support, players who aren't known to the broader support, but ours is a living history. And again, referring back to, you know, the game last night when, you know, the Willie Maley song was sang, I think we do it great pride in knowing your history, and we know some players more than others. I think that's inevitable. We'll all have our heroes. We'll all have heard of players being passed down from previous generations, but I think a marker of the success at times is see if more Celtic fans are familiar with the name Davey Hamilton, for example, or somebody as massive in our history as Jimmy McGrory. See if somebody is you know, some of the younger team know, right, okay, I've heard my dad talking about him, but he tell me a wee bit more about Jimmy McGrory. I think that's the real marker of our success, rather than the physical monument on the grave. I think that's a mark of respect. But I think the mark of sort of, if you're going to say, okay, what makes you sort of successful, it's getting these names out there, and it's a few people, maybe even just feeling able to talk about it. Actually, I don't know that much about them. You know, you can't go, you know, for me, this has been a massive education.
Yeah.
I think as one of these sort of experts, the foremost experts in Celtic's history. And, you know, when we find out things, I rely on, you know, the other guys, and quite often I read the booklet that's produced, and, you know, I'm in awe. And it's an education for me. And I'd like to think that we're accommodating enough. Maybe humble's a terrible word, but that's what we, you know, but, you know, we're
able to say that humble, you know what I mean? The greatest thing about me is I'm humble.
Listen to St. Francis of Assisi, but no, it's allowing people to be open and say, actually, I didn't know that. Actually, can you tell me a wee bit more about him? Or actually, I've got a question. Can you tell me blah, blah, blah? And I might say, no, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out. I'll ask Frank Hannaway. And then kidding on you.
That's actually, see, out of all the names, that was the one that really I had no kind of name recognition at all, was Jerry Reynolds. And I probably should have, you know, in terms of all my years at Celtic and all that, and getting into the kind of, what's Jerry Reynolds' story? Just to settle my hash, as my mother, God rest her, would say.
As I say, Frank's the foremost expert.
Oh, Frank.
Yeah, I mean, it's a common theme that you can't possibly know everything about all the players. You know, you might know something, you might know a little bit. And I'm just the same as Jim. There's players that have come up as part of this. And Jim Rale is actually a good example where, yeah, okay, I've heard him, really tough player. And some things that you've read. I mean, we've been lucky that the likes of Pat Woods, Tom Campbell, David Potter, fantastic people, and such a wealth of knowledge across all of them, that they've attended quite a lot of the actual commemorations. And sometimes you're actually even using them as well for more information, because they've done the spade work in a lot of the histories of these players. So it's just natural then to say, well, you guys know more than we do. You know, we hold our hands up. There's no way we know everything, you know. And it's, you get it sometimes as well, whereby you'll get some people to say, well, you've done one for a player that was only there a very short time, you know, and nobody really knows that much about them. I mean, the example Jim touched on, we did a joint one with the Everton Heritage Society for Alec Brady. Now, who knows a lot about Alec Brady? He was only there for a very, very short time, you know. Or he was there, he's won medals with Celtic, Everton, and, well, they were called the Wednesday at the time, Sheffield Wednesday. You know, great career across different clubs, but you don't necessarily know what he did with Celtic, you know, because it's such a short time span, you know.
Just, when was Gerry Reynolds, what was his period? I'll guess the 30s.
No, you're going back.
What?
You're going way back. Gerry was, it was one of the ones where we actually, I think that we were lucky in a sense, as far as, finding him is concerned, because we'd done a few, in Dalbeth, and amazingly, a lot of these guys are buried not far from each other. And Gerry, we came across Gerry Reynolds' grave, almost by chance. We weren't actually looking for it. But we decided to do a bit more on this to try and, see what we could find. So, I mean, he goes back to the early days of the club.
Well, does he, right?
So, you know.
I don't feel so bad then. I don't feel so bad.
I mean, he's there, like, you know, for about, 1890s, you know, really tough player, fullback, Jeremiah Reynolds. So again, it's not a guy I necessarily, although he's maybe been at the club for 5, 6, 7 years, it's just not a name that's jumped out at you, you know, but as I say, we came across it, you know, and it's almost round the corner from, Dan Doyle, just a bit away from Johnny Campbell or Davey Hamilton or Sandy McMahon. You know, they're all within walking distance of each other, you know, which is amazing. You know,
that's amazing.
You know, and okay, these guys, it's a Catholic cemetery. Not all the players that were commemorated are Catholic either, but it just happens to be that that's where a lot of the Catholics of that time were buried, you know, but... it's amazing sometimes the connections you find. You know, I mean, I've even found that over here, you know, with ex-players being buried not far from each other and had played for the club way, way back.
Way back, right. I was thinking more Joe Kennaway or something. Is he connected?
Joe Kennaway, the Montreal Supporters Club named after Joe Kennaway, but he's buried in Rhode Island. But I'd